This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Radio Astronomy, the podcast from the makers of BBC Sky at Night magazine. You can subscribe to the print edition of the magazine by visiting skyatnightmagazine.com or to our digital edition by visiting iTunes or Google Play.
This episode we're speaking to Professor Sarah Russell from the UK's Natural History Museum. Sarah is one of a handful of UK scientists who will be analysing samples of asteroid Bennu, which was returned to Earth by NASA's OSIRIS-REx mission. We got the chance to find out what sort of analysis she'll be conducting on the asteroid sample and what it could tell us about the history of our solar system.
Hello, I'm Sarah Russell. I'm a planetary scientist at the Natural History Museum.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for coming on the podcast and speaking to me today. Today we're talking sort of space rocks and asteroids and the fact that the Natural History Museum is among a handful, I suppose, of UK research centres that have received a sample of asteroid Bennu, which was collected by the NASA's OSIRIS-REx mission. Before we sort of got onto the Bennu sample, I thought it'd be worth just covering, why do we study space rocks? What can they tell us about anything, I suppose, really?
Yeah, so we're really lucky at the museum. We've got a fantastic collection of space rocks, which all fell to Earth, nearly all of them fell to Earth naturally as meteorites. And most of the meteorites that we have come from asteroids, but a handful come from the moon and a handful come from Mars. The asteroidal ones are really cool because asteroids are 4.5 billion years old. They form at the same time that the sun and the planets were forming. But unlike the planets, which have undergone loads and loads of geology and volcanoes and all sorts of things, the asteroids have remained the same, pretty much the same state for 4.5 billion years. So they give us a real kind of look back in time to the snapshot to help us understand how planets formed.
But you sort of said nearly all of the space rocks have fallen to Earth, but I suppose the caveat there is the sample from OSIRIS-REx. Can you tell us a bit more about that and how you and the Natural History Museum came to be involved in that mission?
Yeah, so OSIRIS-REx is a super exciting mission that has been in the planning for many, many years, but it launched in 2016 from Cape Canaveral. So I was lucky enough to actually go out there and watch it launch. It was so exciting. And we got involved because at the museum, we've been interested in a long time in these asteroidal meteorites that perhaps resemble asteroids like Bennu, which was the target of the OSIRIS-REx mission. So Bennu is a very dark coloured asteroid, and we think it's dark because it contains a lot of carbon. When the spacecraft went to visit it, it spent a couple of years going round and round the asteroid, getting data from it, and it found out that it also looked like it contained water, which again is similar to many of the meteorites that we see in our collection that we've been working on. So for that reason, we were invited to get involved in looking at the sample when it came back to Earth.
So what was your involvement during the mission? Were UK facilities sort of consulted as to, you know, where the sample would be taken from and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a handful of UK institutions that are involved in the mission. There's us at the Natural History Museum, there's the University of Manchester, there's the Open University and the University of Oxford. And at the University of Oxford in particular, they were quite heavily involved in that part of the mission when the spacecraft was visiting the asteroid, because they specialise in spectroscopy and looking at the composition of the rock from from space. So they were heavily involved then. And to some extent, all the scientists were involved in deciding where we would collect the sample from that would return to Earth.
And now you've been given a sample of the asteroid. How much have you actually received?
So we've received about a teaspoonful. So it's 100 milligrams. So it turns out the asteroid is actually not very dense at all. So even though 100 milligrams doesn't sound like a lot, it sort of looks maybe more than you would expect. So yeah, it's a good teaspoonful, a very, very dark, pretty fine-grained grains of asteroids. So they are up to about a millimeter in size, the individual grains that we've got.
And is there, well, presumably there is a huge difference between the sample collected by Bennu and samples that would have fallen to Earth? Otherwise, the sample collection mission, you know, wouldn't have been carried out.
Yeah, so there's a few reasons why it's good to actually go out in space and get a piece of asteroid and bring it back to Earth rather than just wait for your meteorite to fall. So one of the reasons is when a meteorite falls, we very rarely know exactly where it's come from. So it's a bit of a guess, firstly, to find out what sort of body, whether it's an asteroid or a planet or a moon or whatever. And then also, once we know what if it's an asteroid, finding out exactly which asteroid it may have come from is always a bit of a puzzle. And an advantage of going out into space and collecting the sample is that you can do all of this like geological field work, looking at the asteroid in great detail so you can better understand the context of where the sample came from. And then asteroids like Bennu, they're actually, it's quite a kind of fragile, friable kind of rock. So it's actually quite rare for rocks like that to make it down to the Earth as meteorites. So we see some that might be a little bit similar, but we haven't maybe seen one exactly the same in every respect. And the other reason why it's great to have a sample return mission is that every meteorite that comes into Earth, as soon as it enters the Earth's atmosphere, it starts exchanging with the air around us. When it lands on the ground, it might get wet. It might have worms crawling on it. All of those things are contaminating it. But if we bring it back from a spacecraft, then that means we can keep it pristine. And so our sample is kept in a nitrogen glove box. It's never seen oxygen from the air.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
That is so cool. I mean, it does sound quite sort of futuristic, doesn't it? You know, a spacecraft traveling out and grabbing a bit of an asteroid and bringing it back.
It's absolutely amazing. It's such an ambitious project. It's just incredible that humans can do this. I'm really in awe of all of the engineers that got us to this point.
Absolutely. So now that you've got it, what will you be doing with it? What sort of tests do you carry out?
Yeah, so at our museum, we specialize in mineralogy. So we're going to be looking at exactly what the rock is made of. We're going to be using a type of instrument called XRD, X-ray diffraction, which will look at the structure of the crystals inside the rock. We're going to do CT scanning on each grain, individual grain, which tells us what the internal structure looks like, the same way a medical CT scanner works. And then we're going to put it in our electron microscopes to look at it in great detail. And that will also tell us what the chemistry of the sample is. So we're going to have a whole battery of tests. And most of these things are actually non-destructive. So that means that once we're done doing this, they can then be maybe passed on to other labs for other work that might be more destructive.
How do you manage to do all that but not expose it to oxygen?
Unfortunately, we can't keep it kind of in its lovely pristine nitrogen glove box forever, because a lot of our instruments, we need to take it to air to like put it in the instruments. So each the grains that come out to analyze will actually be exposed to air as they come out. But the main part of the sample, we're keeping in nitrogen as much as possible.
And also, you said there that you'll be examining it grain by grain. I mean, how do you actually do that? Is it sort of like, you can sort of imagine like a scientist with like tweezers having to, you know, edge out tiny, tiny grains. And presumably that would take a very, very long time. How long do you sort of expect, for example, your specific sample to be analyzed for?
So the sample analysis part of the mission is due to last about 2 years. And I think that's a fairly good estimate of the amount of time we're going to be working on it. But then, of course, yeah, it's going to be pieces will be kept in perpetuity as well for future generations to be able to use. But yeah, it takes a long time. So that's exactly right. So we are picking the grains out grain by grain using tweezers. Sometimes even tweezers are too coarse. So we're just using a little needle to get it like stuck to the tip of the needle and try and moving it around that way. But yeah, it requires a very steady hand, which my hands aren't the steadiest, I have to say. But requires good eyes, steady hands, and strong nerves.
And is there anything that you're expecting or hoping to find?
So what we're hoping to find is that Bennu might be one of the most volatile rich objects that we've had to study on the Earth, extraterrestrial materials that we've had to study on the Earth. So because the asteroid looks like it contains lots of carbon and lots of water, it has a very low density. And so what we're expecting or hoping to find is that it will be, that it probably accreted further out in the solar system, in a place that's much colder because it's further away from the sun, and accreted with ices and organic material. And then it was transported into the innermost part of the solar system that was a little bit hotter, but it's kept this primordial composition. And we're really interested in that because it could be that asteroids like Bennu actually impacted the early Earth and brought the carbon and water that we needed to create our habitable planet.
Well, that's incredible. Could it potentially tell us anything about like the rest of the solar system, the formation and the history of our solar system as well?
Yeah. So we think that Bennu may contain grains that were actually formed in the protoplanetary disk, so formed inside the dusty disk from which our sun and the planets formed, by looking at these individual little grains, we can find out things like what the pressure, the temperature, composition, the timescales of the protoplanetary disk were. And we can learn something about whether things moved around that disk very much from the innermost part to the outermost part or back again. So those are some of the things that we're going to be trying to look at using this sample.
And with regard to other sample collection missions, like Hayabusa 2, for example, there's a sort of collaboration between results and you sort of compare results, and what does that tell you?
Yeah, so Hayabusa 2 was the first sample return mission to a primitive asteroid that looks a little bit like Bennu, one of these dark C-type asteroids. And the OSIRIS-REx team call Hayabusa 2 their sister mission. And there's going to be a lot of comparisons of the samples that were brought back. We're incredibly lucky to be, you know, working at this time when there are these two missions that both went to these amazing asteroids and brought material back. And of course, Hayabusa 2 was on the back of Hayabusa 1, the first ever asteroid sample return that went to the S-type asteroid Ishikawa. So we've suddenly got all of this exciting material to study and to compare. So one of the things we want to look at is the diversity of asteroidal material that's out there. And that will help us look in a little bit more detail at exactly what might have been impacting the Earth and contributing to the Earth as it was growing and in its later stages of formation.
You've also worked on moon rocks, as I understand it. Do you compare the sample collection missions from asteroids to, for example, like the moon samples brought back by the Apollo missions and things like that? And can that tell you anything?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things asteroids and our moon have in common is that they're both airless bodies, and they have both been subject to what's called space weathering, which is the interaction of energetic particles on the surface of the body. And one of the things we can compare the asteroid rocks, which were returned from the very, we know they were returned from the very surface of the asteroid, from the lunar rocks, which were also very much surface rocks. We know that they were surface rocks. We can compare them to look at how they've been differently or similarly space weathered, which can help us understand how rocks interact with their environment and exchange with their space environment.
And obviously you're primarily concerned with asteroid Bennu at the moment, but do you think about potential future missions? I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if we could do like a sample collection mission, like the Kuiper Belt or something like that?
Yeah.
Do you sort of think about future targets, even within the asteroid belt or beyond?
Absolutely, Ian. So it would be fantastic to, there are so many places to go. And I think, minor bodies in the solar system are very much neglected, but they're an incredibly diverse group of material of objects. And we're only scratching the surface of what we know about them. So some asteroids seem to be made mostly of metal, for example. It'd be great to bring that back down to Earth. There are the E-type asteroids, which may be inner solar system type asteroids. They may have made a really important contribution to the material that accreted to form the Earth. So they would be great to have a closer look at. And then, of course, as you say, Kuiper Belt objects are amazing. It would be incredible to go out there and collect an icy world. And I guess the dream would be to try to bring it back with its ice intact so we could study the ice the same way that we study our rocks. So look at exactly what that crystal structure is, for example, and how the rock and ice are interacting with each other. That would be amazing. And then perhaps the ultimate dream is if we could one day capture a bit of an interstellar asteroid that's an interloper that comes into our solar system, and that might help tell us something about worlds even beyond our solar system. So yeah, that's all a bit sci-fi at the moment. But there's one incredible mission that is definitely going to happen, which is called MMX. So this is the next Japanese sample return mission. And that's going to collect a piece of Mars's moon Phobos. So that's a really exciting mission as well, because currently we don't really know how Phobos formed. Well, it might be a captured asteroid, or it may have formed by an impact into Mars's surface. So there's still like so much to learn about it.
Well, that's really, really exciting. I mean, missions to look forward to, I suppose. But coming back to asteroid Bennu, I'm led to believe that the findings are going to be presented in March of 2024. Is that right? Is that sort of the time that you've got to make and present your initial findings?
Yes, exactly. That's our target at the moment. There's a big conference in Houston every year called the Lunar and Planetary Science Conference. So this conference started the year after rocks were brought back from the moon, and it's been going every year since. And that's where the first data from OSIRIS-REx will be presented. So we're working towards the target of presenting there.
Amazing. Well, I'll definitely look forward to that. I'm sure maybe we could catch up later on in 2024 and, you know, to discuss the findings and how things are going. If you're up
That'd
for that.
Brilliant, Ian. Yeah, absolutely. So up for that.
Cool. Thanks for coming on the podcast and letting us know. And, you know, good luck with your research and your analysis of Bennu. And hope to speak to you again soon.
Great. Thank you very much, Ian. It's really nice to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Radio Astronomy podcast from the makers of BBC Sky at Night magazine. For more of our podcasts, visit our website at skyatnightmagazine.com or head to Acast, iTunes, or Spotify.